When I was watching this, I was thinking, when I find myself in times of trouble, Mother J-Lo comes to me, speaking words of wisdom, you must die.
I mean, call me a sapiosexual, but like, we don't know each other. I have no reason to find you attractive except for like your physical qualities.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I think you might kill me.
Right. And so sexy Catherine is, you know, trying to put the moves on Novak. That's when we see.
Oh, you know what we see?
What do we see?
I'm sorry to cut you off. We see creature number 11. Guess what it is? Creature 11. It's 11 of
I do not know what creature 11 was. Please explain.
It's a vulture.
Ah,
do you remember him?
Yeah.
He's a good boy. Yeah. He's a good boy. He sits on the, he's like, wah! He's sitting on the back. Yeah. He's sitting on this kind of like, I mean, he's sitting on a pedestal, a little birdie swing deal. And he's a white boy with like black points.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just a beautiful bird. I'm not exactly what kind of vulture he is, but mm-hmm. he is gorgeous. So a vulture often depicts, you know, like preying on the dead or the dying.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not exactly sure how that thematically fits into this because we have two very much alive people, but I mean, it's beautiful and reminds you of death.
Right. Well, it kind of is a prelude to Carl coming in and essentially taking Vince Vaughn and putting him on this table.
Mm.
And he like,
oh, well, let's get there.
Yeah.
Because she's distracting him with a kiss. We see Carl, bad guy Carl, mm-hmm. coming up behind him and she makes eye contact and then he flings a bag over his head.
That's
and brings
right.
him back. It's a maroon bag. It's the same color as her lipstick, not going to lie.
Mm-hmm. And so when the bag gets taken off, Vincent Vaughn is like tied to a table and there's this like spindly thing above him.
It took approximately 30 seconds for Vince Vaughn to forget that he was inside a killer's head.
Yeah. Well, he got distracted.
I mean, I would get distracted too.
Yeah.
I'd be like, where did your curls go? Why are you chained to this table? Also, I'm in here because I know you forgot yourself.
So, Vincent D'Onofrio starts like cutting into Vince Vaughn's stomach and then he takes out his entrails and he puts it on the spindle and he starts like cranking it.
Yeah, he's singing a song, which is also a Twin Peaks reference.
Yeah, Leland Palmer sings this in a scene where he has sort of a mental break, Sean points out.
Mm-hmm. And then he does the dozy dotes, mirrorsy dotes,
right.
The lambsy divey, a kiddly divey too, which is what he sang in the bathtub before he had his aneurysm, his infarction.
Yeah. And all throughout this scene, Vince Vaughn is trying to talk to Catherine.
You mother... Did you notice that like fake intestines always look really, really, really fake? I don't care if they get pig intestines. I don't care if they've got like real fake silicone intestines. I have never seen a set of intestines where somebody wasn't like this.
Okay.
Like they, I know this is not a visual medium, but like they wiggle them around, like trying to make them look like this living thing. I don't know what it's like to play with real intestines, but the ones I've seen in shows that people were going to like eat
mm-hmm.
were very malleable and squidgy. And so when they pull out this tough looking stiff tube thing and then pretend it's all squidgy and falling out of their hands and they're like, oh, it's like it gives me the same feeling as when somebody like is going to hit themselves in a face with a pie on accident where it's like, oh, no, this pie. Like, dude, that's Chekhov's pie. You're going to get hit in the face with it. And they're like, oh, this pie. I don't know. I'm going to. Oh, these intestines. They're so squirrely. These innards. I'm like,
Right. And as he's on the table, he's saying like, it's not real. It's not real. And that comes back around later.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The torture device is a thing I forget the name of.
Mm-hmm.
And from the notes that I read, you can pull out between 9 and 18 meters of someone's intestines with this. What happens is you hook the intestine onto this spindle. And then upon turning the spindle, you start like asking them the inquisition of whatever it is. And before they bleed out or die from pain,
mm-hmm.
because those are your only two options. You're not going to survive this. You're supposed to extract information, but it looks like a well bad way to die.
Mm-hmm.
And so, oh, did you know? Okay, so Vince's character, Novak, starts hollering at Catherine and is like, hey, you got to snap out of this. And she doesn't, right? And then he remembers what the doctor said about how you've read her file. You need to hit her with something close to home. And he's like, he's dying, right? His intestines are being ripped from him. He's like, hey, your brother got into a car accident and he was in a coma for 6 months before he died. And I'm really sorry that I had to tell you that. But you need to snap the fuck out of it right now, J-Lo. I only laugh, not because it's ridiculous, but the delivery is ridiculous and you can super tell why they lowered the volume way down so that you would hear like the bad guy being like, and he's talking to his fingers and whatever the f-, and she's just standing there and you see a single tear while he's like, wake up, right?
Yeah.
Because it's such a ridiculous delivery, but then you learn that that's not the original dialogue. What he originally yelled at her was, in college, you got sexually assaulted and you got pregnant and then you had an abortion, which made you feel crazy. And so you went into child psychology. And that's why you became a social worker.
I'm sorry I had to tell you that.
Motherfucker, get me off of this. So she jarred out of the experience by either of those two things.
Mm-hmm.
Walks around. I don't know how she's not chained to the table or how he does not notice his chained doll walking away from the table. But she picks up a stab of Maru, as we would say back in the day, and she stabs him through his right shoulder, right up like mid upper pec, like below your shoulder bone, but like above your pec. Like,
yeah.
And he turns and he looks and he's like, and he sees this stabby thing. 2 inches through his entire torso. Now he's got this spike through him and he turns back and he goes, and then you see that he has tiny little baby teeth. Did you notice?
No.
He's got these tiny little teeth on his top and his bottom, and then he disappears. And then we go back to Vince Vaughn, who's like, and he's doing the shaky thing, and it's got that weird camera effect where he's like, and she's like, it's okay.
Yeah, you got to snap out of it.
Peter, you're fine.
Yeah.
And he's like, what? And he starts touching his guts. He is fine.
Yeah.
Because none of it is real.
Yeah. And do they see like another shine on the on their faces from baby Carl? Is that how they kind of like go into the next scene? Or is it just that they...
What happens is, she's like, none of it's real. He wakes up. He's not on the table he was at before with like the seahorse spindle thing. They're not under those weird shell curtains anymore. They're in a completely different room. They're in a different cell, if you will. And they turn and she looks and there's baby Carl. He's there. And there's this big cube with a swimmy lady. And then there's a weird little vision cube on the side that has more like close-up pictures of swimmy lady.
Mm-hmm.
And then they both get up and they start walking towards there. That's when she says, Carl. And then Carl goes and hugs her.
Mm-hmm.
And she hugs him and she's like, oh, I hope you're okay. I would never hurt you. She touches his back. Her hand comes away. She realized that she has made him bloody by stabbing older monster Carl. And that's when Novak goes over and he's like, this is his victims.
Right. So this is the nipple foundation. Don't make promises you can't keep. It's not foundation. It's nipple fountain. Because on either side of this lady in the cell, there are boobs with water coming out of them.
See, I thought they were heads of penises.
We see different things.
We do. And that's fine.
Which is great.
It's like a weird, like, I should be reading more into it, sculptural water flow things.
It was a note to remind me of this scene so that way I could kind of keep track of it. The nipple fountains. And then she's like, I would never hurt you. And then that's where the don't make promises you can't keep. That's where that comes in, because she can't keep that promise because she did hurt him. And we see that with the blood on her hand.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, she already has. You can't play around inside somebody's head and not mess with them.
Right. Also, that's when Novak sees the mark all over the thing. And it's the brand from the table earlier.
It's that Carver.
Carver. Yeah.
Yeah. Carver Industrial Equipment. Okay. This is where J-Lo is. Her character is trying really hard to separate the worthy from the shithole, is what my
Your nerds.
My nerds, which is my nerdy notes, say. I mean, we all, especially if you disagree with somebody about any number of subjects, we all separate the jerk from the just in people that we love. I mean, it's necessary to get along with children, but it's harder when you find that someone has done something that you find absolutely unacceptable. I have a real big taboo against infidelity.
Mm-hmm.
So if somebody's committed blatant, in your face, like harsh infidelity, and they're fine with themselves as a human being, even though it goes against the social contract that they've signed with their partner.
Right.
I'm like, nope, full of shit. And I find it really hard to forgive you, mm-hmm. if at all, if ever. Right. But like this moment, she is being able to separate the child, the beautiful part of Carl, mm-hmm. from the evil monster. And she's like, this is what is most important to me. Mm-hmm. And Novak does not give a shit.
Right. All he sees is the victim who needs to be helped. And this kind of takes back the scene where you saw they were on two sides of the coin. You know, she was like, I think that there is this golden person inside of everybody, this golden nugget. Mm-hmm.
It's what I'd call the soul.
Right. And he's like, I need to take care of the victim because they had no choice in this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, so he's figured out how to save the victim. And he's right. like, we got to go.
Right.
And so, she's like, no, I'm here for the baby.
Yeah. And he's just like, no, we got to get out of here. And so he's like taking Catherine away from baby Carl. And that's when we see adult Carl come in and grab him.
Oh,
and
man. He it the clowns.
Yeah.
He like spins out of a corner, grabs them up and is like, ugh! And then Vince pushes her button for her, and right. now they're both snapped out.
Right. And that's when Vince Vaughn, his character, is like, we gotta find the, do you see a table over there? He like makes a phone call and everything. Mm-hmm. And basically in these last moments, Novak's on the hunt and Catherine is on the hunt, because Catherine turns around and she locks herself into this mm-hmm. room, mm-hmm. switches stuff around so that way she can bring Carl into her mind. Mm-hmm. And
that reverse feed that we learned mm-hmm. about in the first 10 minutes.
Right. And so
so Novak is able to, through his connections, find the equipment that mm-hmm. was used. Okay, here's the Lydia, are you ready?
Yeah.
What solved this whole entire mystery mm-hmm. is brand loyalty.
Yeah.
Which makes me want to reference DeWalt again. It's a good ladder.
It is a good ladder. They keep really good notes. Carver kept really good notes.
Right?
Right.
Okay, so now they have to get to the chopper for the second time.
Right. As they're going towards, I don't know how they know that this area is where they have to go, but they're out into the random field place, mm-hmm. and they one of the police officers says, we figured out that this specific table was part of a set that was left over at an old farm, and guess who had to clean it up?
He was in charge of locking it up.
Yeah.
And so they know it's an abandoned property, and mm-hmm. they know that these materials would be there. So they're like, it's over here by such and such crossroads. I know exactly where that is, the helicopter guy says. Mm-hmm. And then they like take off in that direction. There's a lot of action like that. Mm-hmm. But then we see J-Lo has locked herself into this room, and she's looking. How? There are at least three different talismans, I would call them, in the room. She has like a Mary card. Mm-hmm. There's a snow globe.
Right.
There's a third thing. I don't remember what it is.
Yeah.
But she goes in with all of these, like, and I will say pseudo Catholic, because it doesn't feel very authentic to me. But and what do I know about Catholicism? But like, she has these saintly ideals that she's going to bring him into her head with.
Okay, so it's not just about the fact that it's Catholicism. It's because of the fact that when he had the seizure and this voice kind of like came in, he was experiencing a religious moment.
Oh.
So it's kind of like that same, like it's kind of like the little like foot in the door for the baddie.
It's funny because like he's definitely coming from a Protestant place and she's definitely coming from an older, more learned institution maybe.
Well, with its own kind of issues.
We don't have to talk about those issues, right, because they certainly don't. None of that's part of this.
Right. It's also interesting considering the fact that Carl's last victim is like almost like her arc, I would almost say, is like her kind of losing her faith.
Oh, yeah. She ends up coming to the end of herself. She's expecting to be rescued. She's expecting to.
She's praying to God that, you know, they'll find her and that.
And she's totally at the end of herself by the time the movie ends.
Yeah, there's like a moment in her cell that she goes ahead and she says, you have to figure something out. You have to figure something out. Like she's telling herself, mm-hmm. you have to do this. I have to do this for myself.
Uh-huh.
It's not going to get done for me.
We don't know how long she was in there either.
Because
mm-hmm. again, a timer would have been really nice.
Yeah.
Okay, did you notice that the helicopters kept buzzing really low over the oil rigs?
Yeah.
That's for dramatic effect.
Yeah.
Okay, so now he is entering her perfect, most perfect brain.
Mm-hmm.
She's got the most perfect brain. Lydia, Jennifer Lopez's brain as Catherine Dean.
Mm-hmm.
The most perfect brain.
Yes.
That makes me mad.
There's like peacocks. Or is it a peacock or is it
hey,
more
guess
peen?
What? Yeah. It's animal number 12.
Yeah.
It's an albino peacock.
Yeah. And baby Carl's there and mm-hmm. they're talking and he's like, I want to stay here forever. And she's like, it doesn't work that way.
Did you love the filigree that was filling around mm-hmm. the frame around them? Just this beautiful vignette of this. I know I use the word vignette too much, yeah. but like it's border. This close up of them. And they do have this precious little border growing around them. And he wants to stay there with her. And she's like, no. He's like, hey, I had this bird once.
Yeah. And again, going back to the bird that was on her face. The story with the bird is that Carl saw a bird with a broken wing. Mm-hmm. And when his dad found it, mm-hmm.
he
knew.
If my dad found
mm-hmm. it, he was going to kill it. So I went ahead and just put it out of its misery.
He held it underwater in a sink.
Right. And you kind of get the feeling like he's asking her to do that for him.
He wants a mercy killing. And she says, oh, no, I can't do that. And the second she says that, the filigree around them starts to shrink.
Right.
And by the time it's gone, he's like, oh, he's here.
Right.
And then we get quick succession, animals 13, 14, and 15, 13, 14, 15, and 16.
Okay.
Which are in order.
Yeah.
You want to guess?
Oh, it's a spider.
Tarantula, you got it.
Yeah. And then there's like a centipede, beetle.
A millipede, a centipede, the big one.
Yeah. A beetle.
Nope.
No.
It's a cockroach.
It's a cockroach.
It's a Madagascar hissing cockroach.
Yeah.
My aunt had some. They're amazing. They're very cuddly. 10 out of 10 would own.
Mm-hmm.
There's, what, 16?
I don't remember.
It was in the water.
It's in the water.
It was swimming just before.
I
It's a snake. It's an albino snake.
Okay.
It looks like an albino. It's a white-ish looking snake.
Yeah.
It's a white snake. It was the band. They were singing a song. It wasn't the band. I don't know. I don't know white snake from what. Do you know a white snake song?
I don't know.
Here I go again on my own.
Going down the only road I've ever owned. As a drifter, I was born to walk alone.
But I made up my mind. Cool, cool, cool. Hey, right. Hey.
Right.
Then there's a weird, like, a weird pattern, a blocky, cubey pattern spreads out over mm-hmm. the small pond in this beautiful, like, and I don't know how to, like, there's this type of altar that is very common amongst Latinx Catholic parishioners,
mm-hmm.
very white with, like, blue borders, creating this kind of sconce that mm-hmm. oftentimes houses a Mary figurine. And that's what we're looking at, really, with, like, these fake cherry blossom trees and a pond in the front, right? Well, in the pond, this beautiful blue pond, there is, so it's kind of this like fake forest scene with this beautiful sconce in the middle. It's probably not the right word. But this spiky, cubey fabric material covers the pond. And then all of a sudden we see this super cool, like envious of the crocodile from Marvel, Killer Croc.
DC.
Sorry. Thanks, Sean. And Jen, the Killer Croc, envious of this scene, right? So the cape and the makeup as he lifts his head out of the water just sheens beautifully. Like, it's gorgeous. And he's like this crocodile Killer Carl guy, right? And he's like, bleh. And she's like, oh, hell no. And she like foomps from being like this habit wearing, beautifully glowing creature. This pseudo Mary character, we would say.
Mm-hmm.
And then she has a crossbow and she regains her beautiful dark lip.
Right. She goes from like Mother Mary to Xena Warrior Princess.
100%. He whips his cape around, loses the cape. He's running through the forest and she's like, oh, hell no. And as he dodges for her or maybe for baby Carl, we don't know, shoots him in the foot. Mm-hmm. And he's like, arr! Shoots him in the other foot. Arr! He falls down, shoots him in the arm. Arr! Other arm. Arr! She's like, I own this.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes to sit on him and she like punches him.
Right.
Okay. And I think we go back to more water torture.
Right. So the lady is like, pretty much water is filled up in the tank.
Mm-hmm.
Novak sees the he's in the area. He can't find any place that it might be. But then he sees like a generator and
yeah, the building is an empty husk. And so he's like, well, there's nothing here. And then a generator goes, woo-hoo, and he's like, why would their generator be going? So he follows a line all the way to a trap door.
Right. And he goes down into the trap door mm-hmm. and he sees the lady in there and she's like curled up next to the into this corner mm-hmm. next to a a pipe that
she's managed to break a pipe. Mm-hmm.
And so he like taps on the glass and we can see that she's still alive, like mm-hmm. breathing air from the pipe because she figured out how she needed to do it. And so he's like, go move on the other side. And I'm like, why didn't you just go? Okay, so this area that she's in has like two solid walls and then two glass walls. And I'm like, why wouldn't you just go to the other glass wall that's further away from her?
Probably would have seen the spigot.
Oh, yeah. It was just kind of annoying.
Okay. Did you notice that she's got her nose clamped as she's breathing through the pipe? Because this actress... Oh, is this a Sean fact?
It's just from
IMDb. It's a IMDb fact. So this actress lied on her resume and said that she didn't necessarily lie, but she said she had been a lifeguard. And so they hired her for the water effects, but she didn't tell them that she needed to hold her nose underwater. So she's holding her nose while breathing through the pipe because she can't stay underwater with her nose unplugged. He taps on the glass with his gun, and then he taps on the glass with his ID, and he's like, get back! I'm going to shoot the glass! And she somehow, in her panicked brain, was like, yeah, I need to get back so he'd shoot the glass. And then he does it. But then we cut back. Okay, so while he's trying to bust through the glass, right? Mm-hmm. The gun, he shoots the gun. It, like, pings off because it's really thick glass, right? We cut back inside the head, and she's, like, grabbed a sword. She's generated a sword, and she decides to stab bad Carl.
Before she does that, he has, like, this nipple guard on his nipples.
Yes!
Again, with the nipple foundation.
Yes!
And so she, like, pulls that off.
Okay, my thought was, wouldn't he be kind of into that?
Probably. And then she generates the sword from her back.
And, okay, so he goes from Kraka Carl to adult man Carl, who has shown up as this reasonable adult, like, two or three times. Mm-hmm. And he's all like, do it! Because he wants a mercy killing. And so she stabs him, and it cuts back to Crocodile Carl. And he's like, you can't kill me. Oh, he doesn't say that. He goes, it's not real. Right? And she stabs him like two or three times and it's not happening. And then she turns around and there's baby Carl. And by that, we mean like six, seven-ish years old Carl laying on the steps leading up to the sconce. And she turns back to Croc Carl and he's all like, boy me God, God me boy, which is terrible writing, but basically means like, you can't kill me without killing him. And if you just try to kill me, you're doing nothing but hurting him. Mm-hmm. Right? And so she's like, well, And so she now enters what I will call the bad tism.
When I was watching this, I was thinking, when I find myself in times of trouble, Mother J-Lo comes to me, speaking words of wisdom, you must die. Oh, no. Oh, I actually made a note. So it's like, Mother Mary comes to me, speaking words of wisdom, you should drown.
You should drown. You should drown.
Yeah.
Okay. So we cut back to Vince Vaughn, who's shot the glass. He's nearly killed himself with ricocheting bullets. He grabs a pipe because he's kind of fractured the glass. He bashes the glass. The water all rushes out. She sinks down. He jumps in. He pulls her up on the bench so he can cradle her. She has no idea that he's not the killer. Here's my thought. Why is he the only one there?
Right. Why didn't anybody else get down there?
How is nobody else down there? Mm-hmm. He's alone with a lady who could be freaking out. There's no way.
Yeah.
So J-Lo drowns a kid?
So she pretty much picks up baby Carl and she takes him to the pond. She's again looking like Mother Mary. And then she puts him down. It's kind of like when he was baptized and he had the seizure.
Well, she's not forcing him down.
Right.
She's just bringing him into the water. But the question is, isn't this still manslaughter?
I mean, I guess.
She's not in imminent danger.
Mm-hmm.
So it's still murder, right?
Right, because she doesn't have to be in his brain.
Yeah.
So yeah, she essentially kills him. She kills a murderer who was in a coma, who would have had to have been, who probably wouldn't have been left on life support. It's like, it's fuzzy, but yeah, essentially she does kill him.
No physical object killed Carl.
Well, that's also the thing. That's what they say later, is that they can't prove it anyway. They have no record of what went inside the head. So they blame it off. They're like...
But isn't it the same as like turning off the machine on somebody?
No, because you can be in a coma for a long time.
So here's my question. If they didn't have this machine and this was his last victim and Julie didn't make it, or they would have figured it out because the table thing should have been like the first thing that they checked. Anyways, I'm going to talk about it later.
Okay.
But let's say that, you know, they found Julie, they saved him, but they didn't do it through this device.
Right. Good old detective work, you might say.
Yeah. Let's say that she, like, when everything was said and done, whether Julie survived or not, they would not be keeping a murderer, someone who would have been probably on... would have, you know, been sentenced to several years of life in prison, They would not be keeping him on life support.
It's very expensive to keep somebody on life support.
I think that when everything was said and done, they would have eventually pulled the plug. So it's kind of this gray area because one, it's almost like we see that as the audience that he wants to be put out of his misery.
Yeah.
And then we're kind of, you know, privy to that information.
Mm-hmm.
But in the outside world, I would think that it would be very hard to find a prosecutor who would say, no, you weren't supposed to do that.
That is the gray area they leave us with. We don't know whether or not she would have been convicted of some sort of killer thing that she is definitely, she's a murderer, but right. Like he wanted to be murdered. So maybe she's more Kevorkian than not. She was honoring the baby Carl inside of him, As well as ridding the world of evil Carl, but he was never going to come out of his stasis status, Whatever, anyway. So it's hard to say. He pants dies. She Pulls off her mask, comes out, and then she cries on the table.
Mm-hmm.
And then Vince is still holding that poor girl. Okay, so the whole last two scenes make zero sense to me. So shall we just go through them quickly?
Sure. Jayla. Okay. So it's outside the house where Carl was.
Mm-hmm, that's his house. Yeah.
Yeah. And so we see Vince Vaughn, you know, kind of like, you know, getting everything finalized there. And he meets J-Lo with this albino dog.
Which is where my notes scream. How is she keeping the dog?
Mm-hmm.
But also, he's on leave for, like, having, like, a mental breakdown and, like, having a hallucination that led him to, quote-unquote, remembering, like, his good old-fashioned police work. And
right.
Then
it's all, like, on-the-record stuff.
He's on leave and he's in the house?
Right.
That's bad.
Yeah.
That's not good math. That's like being like, hey, I'm on a diet, so I'm just going to be at Dunkin' Donuts for like the next 48 hours. So
that's my diet.
Yeah. Like you're not policing there and you don't get to do policing when you're on leave. I know he's FBI, but you know what I mean? You don't get to detective while you're on leave from being a detective.
Right. Like it would have made more sense if like he came over to her house because he was like, yeah, I'm on leave. And then we could see the dog over there. But then we wouldn't get the kids laughing in the background.
Well, yeah, when school lets out, which right. is super creepy. And she turns to him and she's just like, they're going to let me reverse feed. They're like, oh, this is our last hello and our last goodbye or whatever. But she goes, did you hear her? She said, I would never do anything to hurt Edward.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, precedent, lady.
Yeah.
What's the precedent?
Mm-hmm.
The last guy you reverse feeded, you killed him.
Yeah.
Poor Edward. He's going to die.
Mm-hmm.
But his parents will never know. Plus, also, I like to fantasize that the funding will actually end in 6 months.
Yeah. Maybe they'll try something different.
Yeah. Okay.
Because the very last scene is J-Lo in this seabed with an Edward.
Yeah. It's the dried out lake in the desert. She puts a boat in the tree. It's of her own making because it's in her own head. She does that cool thing that's like a metallic piece of fabric to pretend that it's water.
Mm-hmm.
And then she turns around all fancy like. She's wearing the white dress from before with the feathers and the high collar and the Cupid's bow neckline.
Mm-hmm.
And she turns and she sees Edward there. And what they did was they CGI'd in the falling cherry blossoms Because this scene wasn't supposed to be the last scene. What happened was they realized that they had absolutely no closure for Edward's character. And they had like the last scene was like the bell ringing for the kids. And they're like, we probably shouldn't leave that kid hanging. Huh? And so they shoehorned it in, re-edited it, put in some little CGI bits and were like, that's good. We'll just end with that. She's still therapying after being horribly traumatized. Mm-hmm. High fives all around. Yeah, basically. So. And then the credits roll. And there's nothing super excited except for that Valentine's name is Tim.
Yeah.
Oh, and that the American Humane Society was on set at all times during animal scenes.
Well, there were like how many animals? 10?
16
animals.
Do you want me to just read you all of them all at once now? Now that you've heard 5 episodes of this show.
I think we're okay. I don't think we need to hear.
Fine. You don't need to hear the list of all the animals.
But I'll tell you what we should go around and talk about. Our shocked and applaud moment.
Oh, you.
So shocked first or applaud? I think we did applaud last time.
Okay, shocked sounds good.
All right, well, I'll go ahead and start because mine is the one thing that they kind of like put at the very end. They're like, oh, he had an hallucination and it jogged his memory, but he wouldn't have had to have his memory jogged if he just did it at the first. And it was the table that Carl used to do dirty dudes. It was the Carver table. Yeah. It had this very distinct brand. Uh-huh. It had the name Carver on it. And then when Vince Vaughn comes out of his dream sequence, he's like, oh, there's a table in the basement. Is there like a model number? That would have been one of the first things you do because that's a very specific piece of equipment. Uh-huh. Like problem solving 101 is one of these things is not like the other. Let's look at it.
You mean that giant shiny table in the middle of the room that has a serial number on it?
Yeah, it took him the entire, like, 40 hours to figure it out.
What about when he called the guy on his cell phone from a landline and he was like, hey, I need you to go check out this number. And then he's like, call me back when you get there.
And
the
guy was 15 seconds later.
15 seconds later, he walks downstairs. He's like, hey, I called you back. Good. Can you tell me that number?
Yeah. So the smoking gun was, like, right in front of them the entire time and they just couldn't see it because they were dumb. Sorry.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Okay. I'm done.
That's okay. My shocked moment is J-Lo happened to be soft-spoken the entire film. She never got mad. She almost got killed several times. She had to deal with dumb left, right, and center. The closest she gets to having any passionate moment was, with all due respect, sir, I didn't design the program. Like, oh, girl throwing shade, like nothing. I was like, nope, bad, right? And in that phrase that we often go back to, she could have been replaced with a sexy lamp.
I think that is hilarious.
She could have been.
Because, like, how often do you have that high of a protagonist? Like, she's almost, like, right up there. Like, if you want to say that we got 3 protagonists, then that would be a valid, you know, thing to say. Yeah. But she's the first person that we see. Mm-hmm. She's she's in the first and last scene. Mm-hmm. So I would say that that is a protagonist.
She's the first line and the last line or something, right?
Yeah. And she could be replaced with an object and you probably wouldn't lose anything.
Nope. Just put a curly wig on it. Then she gets slammed against the wall by a bodybuilder lady. Could have been a lamp.
Yeah.
It's short and sweet and simple.
Yeah.
Not to say that I... Okay. Yeah. Sorry. That's just... I don't have to like super justify it. She could have been a lamp.
Right.
Okay. Jen, you got one? Lamps, tables. Are you going to get mad about the scissors he uses to cut out the intestines?
I am disappointed, obviously, with the things that most people were disappointed in when this came out. There's very little substance to the story, very little character development.
Yes.
It is more of an art piece. It's almost like you could more or less release YouTube videos of some of the more artistically designed scenes and then just release them as, you know, videos instead of tried to connect them through some cohesive story.
If you took out all of the dialogue, would it still be a good movie? I mean, would it be a better movie? I don't need any of the dialogue. The dialogue is garbage.
So basically redo this movie, but take out all of the dialogue and people are just staring pensively or making like emotional. Like I could see that. You have like, because like one of the best moments in this movie is with Catherine and Carl, when Carl is talking about when he was baptized and he had the seizure. Mm-hmm. And that is like Vincent D'Onofrio doing like incredible acting. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, I agree. I think that it would be a better movie if you took out all of the dialogue and just replaced like the emotions with like acting. Shorter movie though.
Did I cut off your point? Did you?
No. I also think that, I mean, we paid $3 to watch this on Amazon Prime. Nobody has done any work to clean up the film.
Oh, the 4 cigarette marks that bound the film together.
Yeah, I mean, there's no restoration on the version that we watched for sure. And that would have been kind of nice. But, you know, then again, I don't think New Line is around anymore. I did feel like maybe there was a soft performance from Jennifer Lopez, but as far as what era it was coming out of, I thought that it was probably better than most female lead movies.
Yeah, she didn't have to change or become something that she wasn't for a male character, and I did like that.
For how many nipples that are in this movie, she didn't have to show hers.
Mm-hmm. She was not overly sexualized.
Right.
She was a sex object for a hot second.
But it wasn't like, you sometimes see women in these roles and there's like a level of sexual abuse. And I mean, you see that briefly with the corpse, but that is like the furthest that it goes.
Yeah. And there's no romantic arc. We do have the Vince Vaughn, I'm never going to hit that face at the end.
Yeah. Like, oh, so sad.
Yeah. But like, there's no romance there. What would happen in 40 hours of high trauma while you're trying to do your job and she's trying to do her job? Yeah. Good for you. Shall we go into our applaud moments? Because mine is very boring and something I've said before about other films.
Go for it.
Visually, one of the best films I've ever seen. It deserves all the monies and probably more. I do think of it more as an art house film, and I do not rely on the dialogue or the script. So I would like to see this movie redone with the script of the original author who, you know, said that it could have been done better and more accordance with his vision. But in terms of like what this movie is, the quality of production, like take that gold mask, the beaky mask that she wears, mm-hmm. that in and of itself is a gorgeous piece, like a museum quality piece. And if somebody was like, yeah, but that costs like $20,000 of the budget, I'd be like, good, because it's gorgeous and it deserves to be there just for what it is. When if somebody were like to say, you know, the ornate billionaire owned campus of Campbell, whatever services that the Dream Team works at, right? Like it's an Art Deco nightmare that is glorious, and it's so weird because it's so stark and harsh. And then we go into these interior mind scenes where it's like, even though it can be like post-apocalyptic tragic looking, it's a much more intimate and close space. And if you didn't have that wideness, like it's big where it needs to be big, and it's close where it needs to be close, and it's uncomfortable where it needs to be uncomfortable, and it's intimate in non-sexual ways, in a way that most movies dream of doing. And I want to hug it. I like rewatching this film. Maybe it's not my favorite movie of all time, but it has so many merits going for it. It is debatable for like a film class. Like I would definitely, you can't not chew on it. Like we would be here for days. This is a movie that is worthy of debate in a film class. Not just because it's visually stunning, but to debate the things that could have made it better, like the script and stuff. It's a film worth talking about. And I probably would not have said that weeks ago when we decided that's what we were going to do. So I love this film visually, I think more than anything else. And I would 100% buy fan art based on it. Oh, also I have one last point. That is a theory, if you want to end on that, because sometimes you guys like my theories.
Go for it.
No, I want to hear your applaud moments first.
Jen, do you want to go?
Sure. I think that it does a really good job in what it does, which is the art. And it does actually bring some modern... What kind of art form is this?
Surrealism.
Yeah, it does bring surrealism to the masses in sort of a way. Maybe introduce people to some of that and maybe get them introduced to maybe more art than they've had before. It's kind of Dolly-esque at times. And, you know, I wouldn't say that it would be what Dolly would make as a movie.
Nope.
But the attempt at trying to portray the inside of a serial killer's mind is a pretty provocative idea, and I thought that they pulled that off. Like it I mean, it's not maybe not even that inventive. It's probably been done before, just in different ways. It's mostly been, you know, like people interviewing and you just watching the tapes of them talk. So this was a lot more introspective in its attempt, which I liked. It was at the things that it was able to pull off without people complaining, yeah, it's not my original idea. The things that actually did come out that were probably really hard to communicate across multiple teams, you know, costuming and story writing and production and all of those things, that collaboration couldn't have been easy. So it's hard for me to say, you know, they should have done this, they should have done that, because in all honesty, they probably tried to do a lot of different things, and it just wasn't working on film. So for what it does really well.
My applaud moment was when they had that conversation between Jennifer Lopez and Vince Vaughn about their two ideas. And I mostly because I just really like the fact that they are trying to have a conversation about something that is nuanced. And I don't really see a lot of other movies that are similar to this kind of like in this genre that would have that nuanced discussion. Like, yeah, there is some good in there. We see that with Carl and baby Carl, but we also see that Vince Vaughn kind of has a point when, you know, sometimes you have to take the needs of the victim and put that above the person who is the victimizer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just it's a really nuanced discussion, and I kind of gushed about it earlier, so I'm not really gonna go too much into it, but I did like the fact that they put that in. And like, I know I said that the dialogue could be taken out, but if they wanted to put some dialogue in, I think it should just be focused on that specific theme. So
yeah.
So what's your theory?
Okay, did you notice how J-Lo's trying to get Edward on a boat? Did you notice the article where, like, he was found on a beach, probably having fallen off a boat and having Whalen syndrome or whatever, the schizophrenia that he fell into that made him nearly comatose? What's his dad's deal with getting him back on a boat? That's my question. Why are they obsessed with getting a guy back on the boat? When dealing with a kid with trauma, right? Reintroducing the event is reintroducing the trauma. So they're like, there's no progress. There's no progress. Why are you still trying to get him on the boat? Why are you still trying to get him on the boat? So many boats. He doesn't need to be on a boat. He thinks he's a seal boy. He's a little gremlin guy. He's a little boogeyman man. He's a little Moki Loki guy.
I guess this is where like 8 years of, you know, psychological training would really kick into gear, wouldn't it?
Like, you think that if I, who's only worked with children a little bit and only has suffered my own personal traumas, recognizes the fact that you would not put a kid back on a boat. If the goal is you're just trying to bring them out of themselves enough so that they have like quality of life, maybe you're like, guess what, buddy? We're in the middle of a desert, in the middle of a dry lake. There ain't water for days or ever again. We'll live in the Mojave. I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
I want you back. We don't have to deal with boats ever again. You don't even have to look at one. But no, they make her reintroduce boats, and they decorate his little cubicle cell, his little concrete hole in the wall with more boats.
I think that there is merit in trying to reintroduce the experience of the traumatic event in an isolated way. So that's kind of like what hypnotherapy is trying to do.
Hypnotherapy doesn't sound like it works, though.
I'm not saying that this works. Look, she went at the very end of this movie. She goes back in. She's like, I'm going to try the reverse thing.
Right.
And she tries it with the kid.
The last guy she did it with died.
The last time she did it, the guy died. And we don't see how it ends, if Edward got any better.
I think the funding ended after 6 months and he was just more about boats in a bad way. You're making the next white whale guy.
Moby Dick. Oh, no, it's not Moby Dick. It's Captain Ahab.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, call me Ishmael. This stuff is...
All right. That's a great applaud.
Yeah.
It's not an applaud. Jed, my applaud was that this movie is beautiful. This is my theory that this poor kid is... because no one understands children. And she's all like, I had great experience with taking kids in foster care. And like, you know, putting kids in foster care is better than fixing the environment they're in. That was her argument. She was all like, here's the thing. He's in his own head. Let's take him out of his own head and put him on a boat.
You're allowed to be angry about this.
I have two final Sean facts for you.
Great. I do like Sean facts. Are any of them boat related?
I have a boatload of Sean facts for you.
Me too. Go on, you dinghy.
An episode of American Dad spoofs this film. Sean says in 2009, but he might just be referencing when American Dad came out. I'm not sure if 2009 is when that episode aired or not. This also had a sequel to it.
Yeah, I saw that on the IMDb page, but I didn't have the guts to click on it.
I think we should watch it, but I am utterly convinced without watching it that this movie is 100, if not a million times better. So it was a direct-to-video sequel.
Mm-hmm.
in 2009, the same year as this American Dad thing, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
The plot is thus. The Cusp, yes, the man's name is The Cusp, is a serial killer who kills his victims and then brings them back to life over and over until they beg to die. Psychic Maya is an investigator who gained her powers after being in a one-year coma caused by being the Cusp's first victim. Now the Cusp is back, and with no time for preparation, Maya has to enter into the killer's mind to save his latest victim.
A psychic.
Yeah.
A relatively good science fiction that we just watched.
I'm not sure if she like enters his mind psychically.
But
that
she's
would
been
be horribly awesome. I would watch it and watch it and watch it.
It can't be any good.
It can't. It defies all logic. It probably thought, somebody down the road thought, okay, first movie made three times as much as the budget, and it was probably the plot that did that. No, it was not the plot that did that.
No, it was not the plot that did that.
Oh, God.
Hey, you guys got anything else?
Nope.
Hey, applauders. We made it to the end of The Cell.
And the end of August.
Yeah. Hey, September's upon us. Let's revel in that end of summer, beginning of fall business. You know, thanks for joining us for our review of The Cell. I hope you enjoyed Jen's bumper at the end of each episode. She works really hard on them and they're so funny.
I like the custom title names. Those are good.
Yeah. I like sometimes when she does a voice effect, like when she did the brownies for Willow. That was really great. Anyways. We appreciate every single listen that you give us.
Yeah.
We hope that you enjoyed our banter. Engage with us on the social medias Jen's about to list in the bumper. And know that you're incredibly good looking. And good looking enough that somebody will murder you. If you give them the chance. But you can cut that out, Jen. I don't really care.
Until next month, this is Jen McQuaid.
I'm Naomi McQuaid.
And I'm Lydia Malcolm.
And this is Shocked and Applaud. Thank you so much for listening.
This concludes part 4, and you've now reached the end of our review of 2000's The Cell, Applauder. Congratulations on escaping our deepest and darkest desire to have you with us for an unhealthy amount of time. But if you're still having a psychotic desire to cram more content down your earholes, I'm happy to let you know we're celebrating the mental health podcast genre this month and have some great recommendations. Meditation for Women is a guided meditation podcast that will inspire, calm, and center you. And Inside Mental Health, a Psych Central podcast, is an award-winning show that approaches mental health in an accessible fashion. Check out this release's description for links to these shows. Hey, this is your audio engineer, and you may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not even Carl Jung, Jen. Are you sure you're not subconsciously using this podcast as a non-intrusive way to talk with us? Sure, we all are. But you can even get those comments mentioned by us in our next episode by sending them to our social media channels. You can find us at Shocked Applaud on Twitter and Instagram, and Shocked and Applaud on Facebook. Or, if email is more your pace, why not send those adorable little neurotic quibbles and questions to shockedandapplaud@gmail.com. We'll be taking a short break, and we'll return with a brand new review September 14th. It's much in the vein of our never-ending story and Return to Oz episodes, and I think it'll be a great return to some of our more family-friendly discussions. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.
Yay!
Call a fly with no wings.
Don't, Dad. Please don't.
A walk, Carl. You call him a walk. It's a terrible meme.